FC Dallas at Houston, June 23rd, 2017.
Welcome to the Dallas Soccer Show. I'm Tristan Vick, and I'm here with Dustin Nation. It's Monday, June 26th, and we're here to talk about this past weekend's match with Houston, the Texas Derby. We're going to go ahead and give a little bit of an update on the return of Dallas's talisman, Mauro Diaz, as well as dive into an article written on Big D Soccer about the Dallas Beer Gardens and their traveling away fan section this weekend's game in Houston and some thoughts that they had on that. So Dustin, how you doing tonight?
Doing all right, yourself?
I'm doing well. Not too bad. I got a new microphone, so hopefully I sound crystal clear to everybody out there. I'm trying to go for Paul Harvey, but I just get too excited to do Paul Harvey, so I'll take that.
We'll settle for the rest of the story.
Sounds good. Sounds good with me. So this past weekend, Dallas got a point out of their battle in the swamp of Houston down at Robertson Stadium, BBVA Compass Stadium. And they probably all lost about 5 to 10 pounds in sweat. What'd you think of the match?
I thought it was a real up and down affair. I felt like no one really had a bad game, but no one really had a fantastic game either. So I think that the result was a fair at a 1-1 draw, but I felt like that FC Dallas probably had the upper hand most of the match, but in the end, the point is all that matters.
I agree. I think that it's a fair result, but at the end of the day, the way that FC Dallas approached that match was they wanted to get a point, avoid any injuries, give Diaz a run out, and just see what happened.
Yeah, I felt like there were a couple players that had some really good, solid games. I felt like Figueroa was super solid in the back. He was always there to make a timely challenge, always there to cut out the cross and clear it from danger.
No, definitely. I think whenever you're looking at how they set up the back line, the one thing you have to check out is not just what are they going to do as far as accounting for Zimmerman's injury, but Houston's a primarily a counter-attacking team, and whenever Dallas was approaching the match, they wanted to keep the game very narrow. I felt like while Barrios had a great assist in the build-up to the goal, there wasn't a lot of action down the sides and the flanks. And so whenever Dallas would go in on the break, it was always in the middle. They were trying to clog up the passing lanes, make it very compact and narrow. And that type of a strategy works really well against a team like Houston that's very dominant or reliant on their striker, Chuba Torres. But also, they weren't exactly set up to counter that very well. And I think Houston fans can be a little bit disappointed because they really wanted to get more than just a point out of this match. And it turns out they barely got a point. And I guess it was a fair result, but they weren't not the better team on the night. I think that Dallas definitely outplayed them.
Yeah, I think I remember reading in the stats that Dallas enjoyed the greater percentage of possession. And, you know, they had like something to the nature of 9 corners as compared to Houston's 1 or 2. I don't have the stats in front of me, but yeah. And you know, when you get corners, that's indicative that you're pushing the game towards the opponent. I thought that they did the 4-3-3 with Tesho and Rudy and Barrios up front. I felt like that Tesho out wide was a little bit ineffective. Anytime that he got more central, things seemed to get more lively. Then they played pretty fluid up front with everybody switching spots, with Rudy going wide or Barrios and Tesho switching sides. But anytime that Tesho was in the middle, I felt like the attack was definitely a lot more fluid because he's kind of gives you an anchor point to get the ball to the big man. He'll hold it up and then play will flow around him.
Definitely. Whenever he's aware and has that high situational awareness that other people can create opportunities off of the work he's doing, then he's going to be able to open up the defense. He's going to be able to turn the screw, so to speak, to allow somebody like Barrios to slip in behind. I thought the most important aspect of something that Oscar Pereira is going to want to build on going forward, and it kind of sucks with the international break coming up right now. But with Mario Diaz coming back into form, playing up there with Kellen Acosta, what was really strange to see was how well they were going to be able to perform when Kellen had been filling the Mario Diaz role, and now they're back. How are they going to share that space? And it was a little bit of an awkward relationship at first. I felt that there's definitely room for improvement. I think if Diaz is at full strength here in about 3 or 4 matches, then Dallas is going to really turn back into that offensive juggernaut that they were last season. The way that Dallas is playing now, it's much more of a defensive team that's able to lock down once they get that go-ahead goal. You don't see a lot of teams putting multiple goals past Dallas. And now that Diaz is back, Costa and Diaz both there in the middle, that's going to be interesting to see how they accommodate that. I would be remiss if I didn't say I was a little bit peeved that Acosta's playing so well, because now he's leaving for this Gold Cup, which doesn't even start for another week. But MLS takes a 2-week break during the Gold Cup group stage, so hopefully that means that Diaz can really get up to full strength. Maybe they play a scrimmage and he's able to get some of that match fitness under his legs. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just, because by the 60th minute, he just looked beat in that heat.
Let's talk about Diaz for a little bit.
Sure.
So Diaz, he moved the ball well, but some of the decision-making just felt like he wasn't quite up to match speed yet. He had several corners just fly right over the entire group of everybody, really. He had a couple good through balls, and he obviously had the assist where he set up Barrios to give the ball to Rudy. But other than that, there were a lot of errant balls, a lot of choices that he made that just seemed not quite right just yet.
There was a great article on Big D Soccer today about the passing charts of Diaz compared to Acosta. And if you put them side by side, they look very similar. And you're used to seeing Diaz maybe play it out wide, play it a more horizontal game. And I think that for two reasons, it was a very direct match. One, he doesn't have that lateral quickness back yet, and he's not able to really beat anybody off the dribble. And then the second is Houston itself was set up in a way that encouraged the more direct attack. And like you were saying, with Tesho being up there, it really limited the effectiveness of Diaz. On the set pieces, I completely agree. I'm not usually expecting a goal off every set piece, but I would expect it to be within like 10 yards of somebody on the same team. And yeah, you're right. They just skied over many times. And that's rusty because you probably haven't been doing anything but taking them in practice. So there's going to be some bedding in time. I mean, I thought Acosta looked a lot better at set pieces.
Yeah, he had a lot more that were on target, but Acosta also had that one stinker that just went straight at the Houston defense and didn't even clear the first man.
That's true. I still think I would rather have Acosta taking the set pieces. Everything I'm going to say about that, I feel like, is going to have to take another month for it to happen because of this Gold Cup break. But hopefully tomorrow night, Diaz is able to really run the show, be the main man tomorrow night against Colorado. I would love to see his fitness level after playing in Houston. That's got to take a lot out of you, but I still think he gets the start.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, this episode will come out after that match happens, but it'll be interesting to see what kind of roster that Pereja puts out there. How much youth, how much experience, what mixture of the two. But yeah, I think Diaz definitely has a lot of room to improve. That was kind of a mixed bag for him, that first start. But, you know, it's under his belt. He's got that first start out of the way, and onward and upward from here.
Definitely. I think that's a way to look at it. I think when fans think of FC Dallas, they primarily think of the attacking threat that Dallas has, and they really do have all sorts of just little can opener type players that can just peel back the defense layer by layer. And I think Diaz is somebody who's going to really take those opportunities, but he's also somebody that's going to bring a little something different each time and whenever he does take on the defense. And so he's really going to make defenders stay on their toes, I think, with how accurate his passes are. You look at some of the other teams, right? I was looking at the MLS salaries today for the highest paid players. And Pirlo, I forgot that Andre Pirlo was even in the league. He was on the bench for NYCFC yesterday against the Red Bulls, but never played. And I don't think he's played that much. But one of the reasons why is because they play a much more high tempo game and he just sits back and dings the passes. And Diaz is definitely going to be somebody who has to get that fitness level up before he can really make the true impact that he has. So it's only going to get better as far as Dallas is concerned whenever he gets the full strength.
Yeah, something that I was just thinking about that's pretty exciting to me is even though a lot of the decision making may not have been great, the connection that he has with Barrios is just, it's out there for everybody to see. You know, they were constantly talking and playing off of each other, and he was sending Barrios through balls left and right, and they seemed to have a really good connection.
Definitely. Last year it was Castillo for the first half of the season before they sold him, and this year Barrios is going to be the beneficiary of that. I do worry a little bit about how tall Barrios is. I think he's only 5'2", and so he's definitely someone who's going to get pushed around. He's not able to physically impose himself on the games, but he's also somebody who doesn't need to be effective. As long as he can get around the defender and get into some space, give him that ball. As long as Diaz is able to find space for him to run onto things, kick it over to the middle, those crosses can be deadly. You didn't really see that in Houston, so hopefully tomorrow night we get another look at that.
For sure. All right, so one of the stories of the game was probably the thing you couldn't see outright, but you could see take a toll on the players, and that was the heat.
Yes.
It's Houston, and so, you know, it's not only is it hot, but it's humid. And it was very evident that the players were struggling to deal with the heat, not only the Dallas players, but the Houston players as well.
I thought that the heat of you could tell about the 35th minute in the first half, about 5 minutes after the water break, they were breaking down in terms of these like half tackles or these challenges that you just don't normally make in a match, which you saw this in 2014. One of the World Cup venues was in Manaus, which was basically in the Amazon. Tim Vickery of the BBC talks about how that when they were building the stadiums for the tournament, they weren't able to drive the parts of the stadium that needed to get there. They had to float them up the Amazon on barges because it was the most cost-effective way. That's how in the jungle this was. And there was a statistic going around that basically once you played a match in Manaus, you lost your next match every time. And the United States was, of course, they played, I think it was their second match against Portugal, they played in Manaus. No, I think it may have been the third, but either way, it was absolutely searing hot. And the players were dying, and you could just tell the humidity combined with the heat was a terrible combination that was just going to leave them knackered for the rest of the tournament. And I'm surprised they went as long as they did against Belgium in the round of 16 because they played that match there. But the type of atmosphere and the weather that you play in Houston, it's going to do damage to you long term if you're not careful. And I think some players just said screw it and just would go in for these half tackles versus actually trying to maybe do the extra work that's required, and they're just tired. And I think that's why I got pretty chippy towards the end especially.
Yeah, they definitely stopped running, and even a Rudy, you watched him, you know, he was jogging around trying to stir up the odd turnover, but it was, I mean, he was never sprinting full out like he normally does. He was slow. I thought Hedges and Acosta in the first half especially looked like they were really struggling with the heat, which is weird because they just got done playing two games against Central American teams.
Yeah, that's true. I could see that being something that you wouldn't expect to have happen. Maybe they were just getting used to it. I don't know, coming back into the side versus playing with some of the internationals.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, but then towards the end, people started cramping and it just didn't look like a very pleasant experience.
I can understand now why people in Houston don't go to the matches all the time. It is not fun to stand out in 89 degree heat on a Friday night when, well, I mean, we can get to the field too if you want to, but the field that they were playing on was just awful. I don't understand how MLS has not required there to be more standards when it comes to pitches in the league. It is one of my biggest issues with this league is that they are just glad to have a team, and I'm glad that they have teams. Like in New York City, they have the two teams now. But the pitch in Houston was so bad, it looked, I think I texted you this, that it looked like someone had been shooting it with a shotgun in spots because of how bumpy it was. And I don't remember it raining that day. Could be wrong. But it looked like they had just soaked parts of the field in water. And I don't understand. Like, we switched the grass in Toyota Stadium this year. and our field looks fine, but their field looks like somebody ran over it with a golf cart or something.
It looks like a gaggle of amateur golfers got out there and started chipping balls before the game.
Yeah, or like there's the video of Trump driving his cart onto the putting green at his course. It's like he was just driving all over their field or something, and then they decided to play a match. It just passes were, it was like whack-a-mole, and so they would either just stop or be much slower, or the bounce just looked off. I wasn't at all convinced that they hadn't done something to break up play. Maybe that's why nobody's gotten a point. Anything other than a point down there is because the field was so crappy. But I thought it was telling that out of all of the opportunities that were created, they had shots, but nothing was really on target besides the two goals.
Yeah, sure. I mean, between the heat and the pitch, maybe that is why Houston doesn't really lose at home. But, you know, we didn't lose when we were there, so job done.
Exactly. And I think it's telling that the number of passes this match was substantially higher than the league average or the team averages for the season. The FC Dallas attempted over 475 passes, and Houston's not far behind with 450. And those both far outpace their season averages. I think Dallas is somewhere in the 380 range, and then Houston's down in the 350 range. So at some point, everybody just realized nobody's going to score.
It's easier to pass than run.
Exactly. So I can't blame them, but it definitely made the second half nearly unwatchable, except for when it started to get a little bit heated in the end. So
yeah. All right, so Dallas comes out with 1 point, and we are all knotted up in the race for El Capitan.
That's right. They're going to come back for the third leg.
Right, and that's at Toyota Stadium on August 23rd.
Yeah, and so I think that going into that, if it's not 105 degrees, which it very likely could be.
Possible.
We'll at least have Zimmerman back. We'll have our full team at full strength. I would give us, if you said, would you rather have a healthy FC Dallas or a healthy Houston? I think a healthy FC Dallas is going to take them every day, especially once Diaz is really accustomed, fully up to speed, on the same page with Acosta. Dallas should be favored to get 3 points from that and take that trophy back.
I would agree. I think the one thing that they'll need to watch out for is if DeMarcus Beasley is back. He was really devastating that first match at Toyota Stadium, going down the left flank against Grana. Hopefully, if he's back, then FC Dallas has a better answer for that this time.
I agree. I think that once you look at how many passes were made and how many pointless passes were made, I think that you'll probably see something different whenever we get to August.
Yeah, and if they draw again, then they'll have drawn all three matches. And according to Wikipedia, the tiebreakers are goal differential, which will not be in the play because they drew all three. Then comes the MLS Cup playoffs. If they happen to play in the playoffs, whoever wins gets El Capitan. And then the next order of precedent is the CONCACAF Champions League. If they met, whoever won would get the tiebreaker then. And then after that is the Open Cup. If they meet in the Open Cup, then the winner will get the El Capitan. And should all of those tiebreakers still not decide something, Houston will retain El Capitan.
All right, so we're moving on now. And if you look at Big D Soccer, there's a great article written today by Mo Bushnak. And you can follow him on Twitter at KnackOutPunch. And he is a supporter of FC Dallas that went and traveled down to Houston for the match and sat near the Dallas Beer Guardians traveling away section. What'd you think of the article? He talks about how he felt like there was just a lot more aggressive behavior by the traveling fans than he's used to at even home matches, and that maybe the Beer Guardians aren't the place for him any longer.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as with everything, there's two sides of the story here. I think that he's sat in front so he could hear everything behind him, but at the same time, there are definitely some things that he points out that probably don't belong at a sporting event. Throwing beers, group chanting vulgarities. I think that if you want to have a family atmosphere, if you want to be able to bring your kids and not worry about them learning new words, I feel like that may not have a place. But at the same time, I've never sat with the Beer Guardians. I've sat near them, and I really appreciate the atmosphere that they provide during the games. But, you know, I probably wouldn't bring my kid to sit with them, and, you know, I'm kind of torn on this one. How about you?
So I think that there's a couple of things that suck about this. The first is that, there's a couple of good things and then a couple that suck. The first thing that's good is that Dallas has some traveling fans going down for Houston. They're bringing enough supporters that they have a section cordoned off for them. I like that. MLS needs more traveling fans. I think that's what really makes rivalry week in the league something more than just promotion that you can run commercials for. But that being said, there are some bad things and some downsides. I don't have a problem with rowdy behavior. I don't have a problem with vulgar language. But I also don't feel like if I were going to a match with my kid that I would be sitting by them. I'm not saying that because I bring my kid, you can't do those things. I would expect you to do them no matter who was there. But I think soccer has, or MLS especially, has really grown in terms of the fan culture in the past 5, 6, 7, probably past 10 years. Whereas 10 years ago, you maybe had the occasional game on television. You didn't really have a fan base that had these supporters groups very organized. And for FC Dallas, having a official supporters group is a good thing because, one, we have one of the lowest attendances in the league. And two, it's good for atmosphere, like you said. So I don't really mind it. I think that what this guy experienced is hopefully the exception and not the rule. I don't think that somebody who pays money to go to a sporting event should have to deal with that. And it sounds like a couple of bad people maybe made the whole experience bad for this guy and not necessarily the entire group as a whole.
It's possible that, you know, this was just a couple of bad apples, but...
True. I think that, yeah, I don't mind it too much. I just think that you should be aware of your surroundings. I remember being in college doing all sorts of stuff at football games. So I'm not somebody who is without blemish, but at the same time, I don't feel like Dallas is going to be known as a place that you can't go and enjoy yourself at a match, no matter where you're sitting. I think the Beer Guardians do a good job, so I'm not going to condone their behavior. Hopefully they don't do it again, and hopefully people feel like they can still bring their kid, because again, it's a 20,000-seat stadium, so if you want to sit over there, go for it. But if you want to just have a good time, you don't have to sit there. You can take your kid and sit somewhere else.
Fair enough. I don't think there's much more to say about this. It hasn't been said on Twitter.
Sounds good. So, you got a prediction for tomorrow night's U.S. Open Cup match?
I'm going to go with 1-0 Dallas.
I don't know. Colorado is at the bottom of the league. They can't get goals. They'll have Timmy Howard there probably. Unless they decide to give the old man a night off, he's going to get peppered with shots. I think it's 3-0, and I'm only saying that. 3-0 Dallas, and I'm only saying that because I'll be there, and I want to see the goals.
With my luck, since I'm not going to be there, they'll score about a bajillion.
Maybe so, you never know.
All right, a little bit of shopkeeping. I'll be on vacation next week, and so we won't be recording another episode until after I get back. And in that time, Dallas will have played Toronto, a full-strength Toronto, I might add, with Bradley and Altidore, while we don't have Hedges or Acosta, but I'm not bitter. And DC United, both next week, both at home. So good luck, FC Dallas.
That's right.
All right. And that brings us to a conclusion for this show.
Thanks for listening. Share us, like us, leave us a review on iTunes.
Tell your friends.
Put it on Facebook. We love the listens. Even if you're not a soccer fan, it's fun to hear what people think of the show. So give us your feedback.
Tweet us at Dallas Soccer Show. That's soccer with no E because the names can't be too long. All right. See you next time.
All right. Later, guys.